Session number 17741.
Norman Smith, 3-1. Where were you born, please?
Bow, London.
Which year was this?
January 1924.
Did you grow up and have your education in Bow?
No, my father was in the police, so we made about 8 moves before I was 15. I went to the normal elementary schools till I was 12. Then I got a scholarship to St. Joseph's College in Beulah Hill, West Norwood, London, the Christian Brothers. I left there without any qualifications whatsoever, because I wasn't very bright, January 1939, when the war started. I know it sounds silly now, but I didn't feel like being a schoolboy when the war was on. And I then got a job in an office in the Fenchurch Street in London, the HP Motor Policies, as a clerk.
And that's what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes, when war was declared, I was working there in Fenchurch Street as a office boy.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, we were in the Caledonian Road police station at that time, where my father was an inspector. And the always remembered, well, perhaps we shouldn't comment on it, but one of our largest and most heroic inspectors was, the minute the war siren started, was seen by most people running down the road, blowing his whistle, and vanished into the nearest air raid shelter, which we thought was very good.
How did you feel about the war declaration?
I didn't realise the enormity of what was about to happen. We'd had so much propaganda, the Germans had cardboard tanks, and what was going on in Europe, I don't think really interested boys of my age. I think we just thought all with the propaganda that the Germans would be defeated by us and the French, and it would probably all be over before we got involved.
What was this about the Germans having cardboard tanks?
Well, it appeared in a number of newspapers, as I recall, I could be wrong, and perhaps on the radio, but the general thing appeared to be in what we ordinary young people heard, because we weren't terribly interested, actually, was that they were very inferior and they hadn't got anything that was worth worrying about. And as usual, you know, the British would see them all off. Obviously, our history lessons at school hadn't been very thorough, because in truth, the opposite is quite often what happened.
How did the war affect you personally at first?
A great deal. I wasn't happy at home, through no fault of my mother or father, but my mother came from Ireland and was, I suppose, to be very, very critical, a very, very bigoted Catholic. She had a brother who was a Catholic priest in England, a sister who was a mother superior in Johannesburg, and like all good Catholic mothers of that time, your firstborn male child is given to God. I never really took to this religious preoccupation, and of course it was my mother's whole life. And what happened was, when the war actually started, it didn't make a lot of difference, because from memory, nothing happened throughout the whole of 39. I ran away up here to join the Merchant Navy, which I'd always wanted to do.
Could I just ask you what it meant, being given to God?
To give your son to the priesthood, to be made a priest, and if possible, one of the daughters goes to the nunnery. This, of course, is going back to, they say, when my mother was probably born, about 1890. And I was scheduled for the priesthood, you see. Because my mother went to every mass, every service. I was an altar boy. And then when I went to the Christian Brothers, which I liked enormously, and the Catholic priests were fabulous guys. They all played rugby and they were terribly well educated. And it was the parishioners that were more phony than actually the priests, who were great. And the Christian Brothers were absolutely fabulous. They all had big canes and over-the-desk boy. And if they couldn't get at us on the classroom, well, they used to beat the daylights out of us in football or rugby. It was a great system.
What was your mother's maiden name?
O'Kane.
Which part of Ireland did she come from?
Ballymena North, Antrim. I think they were bandits. The way they talk about what went on there, you know, with the different sections before the war. Anyway, I ran away to Liverpool, got able to get on a Norwegian ship, came off the dock gates with a load of other chappies, only to go as like a washer-upper. And the dock police were, you know, wised up to young chaps doing this. And of course, I got recaptured and sent home to Daddy on the train.
When was this about?
This would be 1939 toward... No, it would be 1940. Yep, somewhere around the middle of 40, because I know it was summer. And I hadn't much money, you see, so Daddy used to, when they were handed over to the police, having your father as an inspector, or chief inspector as he was then, and Daddy agreed to pay the railway fare and came back to King's Cross, which was just down the road from where we lived. And there we were back again.
What happened next to you in the war?
Well, then it started up, I think, on the vaguely London about September 1940. That's when, from memory, they really started coming over. I don't know how long for, but every night. Strongest memories of the blackout. I was always been fascinated by films the whole of my life. And when we went to the Caledonian Road police station, there was the Mayfair cinema next door to us. So in no time at all, I was in, up in the operating box, and I knew how to work the things, splice the films and all that. And then the theatres were closed for some time at the beginning, but then they were allowed to reopen. Because I've got memories of being on the roof of the Mayfair, because the main line railway station, railway line up for north runs through that area. And just by us was the big bridge. And we used to be on the roof of the Mayfair cinema when they were dropping the bombs, and we all used to dash like mad down out the way. And also in the police stations in those days, there would be about 25 to 30 single men. So when it was not too bad, we used to get on the roof and watch what was going on. And then Dad used to come up and shout, "Anybody up there, you devils, come on, get down out of it."
What did the Blitz look like from the roof of that cinema?
Not a lot, because we didn't have concentrations, but you could see it in the sky for miles, because some of the fires were so big, and I believe the water levels were low, that the glow in the sky could be seen for miles. We had quite a number of bombs, and because we were only, as you probably know, the Caledonian Road is only about, say, 20 minutes, half an hour's walk from King's Cross. And that was all my father's ground, King's Cross, St Pancras are together, and then up the road, Euston, and he didn't have Euston. So there was quite a lot of bombing. I joined the LDV as soon as I could, as soon as it started, and that was in the old Caledonian Road market, which pre-war was a huge, what they call a car boot sales now. It was an old cattle market.
What type of people were in your LDV unit?
Old dads and a few lads like myself that were thought it would be a good idea and a good adventure. And it was a school just outside the market, one of the famous London schools, you never see them here, with the playground on the roof.
And did the Home Guard bear any resemblance to what we see in Dad's Army on the television?
Allowing for the fact that 90% of what we do ordinarily is so uninteresting, nobody would even look at it twice. The gift is in making what we did, which was so dull and uninteresting, entertainment. As entertainment, Dad's Army is absolutely perfect. And as a boy of the same age as Pikey, totally obsessed with American films, wanting a machine gun, wanting to look like a gangster, you've no idea the influence the films had on most, shall we say, uneducated people of my age. It really was all, it was everything. We really identified with it. It was unbelievable.
But you think there's a basis of truth in Dad's Army?
Oh, yes, because Jimmy Croft was in it. As you know, Jimmy Perry. David Croft was a producer. But Jimmy Perry was in it as a boy. So, of course, he's able to, when they did the programme, they were able to really make it into the fabulous entertainment it was.
Did you get much of a military training in the LDV?
Well, not a lot there. And one of the characters we had there was a corporal from the Great War, who you'll realise we regarded as old dads, because they were in their 40s. And I'm not sure whether... I know this happened, but I'm not sure if the result is true. But he had fought in those Afghanistan and all those wars, and he was very similar to him, except not so entertaining. And we had an old Lewis gun mounted up on the roof. And one night when it was very, very cloudy and very, very low, and there was these flames going away in the sky, he screamed that there was a Zeppelin. Well, we'd heard about Zeppelin raids, and he started shooting off this Lewis gun. There seemed to be a great flash in the sky and red. Now, whether that was bombing, we don't know. But the next day, he was running around telling everybody he'd shot down a Zeppelin. And the RAF did turn up with one of their balloons and thousands of yards of cable where they'd pulled down hundreds of chimney pots trying to get it off. And a balloon had come down. And, of course, everybody denied anything ever having to do with it. Now, whether you can shoot a balloon down with a Lewis gun, I've no idea whether it would blow up or whether it not. But a balloon did come down and pull down dozens of chimney pots, you know, with the way the cables drag. And he was convinced he'd shot down a Zeppelin, so we felt rather good about it.
Did you think that the Germans would invade at that time?
I don't think we ever thought it was a possibility. We suffered from the enormous illusion that we were quite capable of dealing with them, which shows how crazy it all was.
But you say that not many bombs fell in the Caledonian Road area?
Oh, yes, but it wasn't... They concentrated on the docks, you see. What they were after was the as you know, the docks. The docks in London are such an enormous, vital area. Docks and railways. Because apparently, you see, I don't know, but apparently when they came across the North Sea and they weren't too sure where they were, they found the Thames and sort of just came up the shiny Thames, you see, and sort of turned left and we'll drop them here. We had landmines, and of course with a lot of back-to-backs there, when the big bombs did go like a landmine, you'd a whole roads would go up. And every night, well, every afternoon about 2:30, the queues started to go down the underground.
Which underground station?
That's the Caledonian Road station, which was opposite our police station. So as the bombing got worse, half past 2, 3 o'clock, there'd be queues all there with the bedding. And then when I wasn't either on fire watching in the office or doing the LDV, I was sort of allowed not to go far away because I was only 16. I'd either go to the cinema if it was open, up in the box with Ronnie, and learn how to change over and how to operate the thingies. Or I'd go down in the Caledonian Road where I knew everybody and listen to the sing songs and watch the sort of the underground life that went on down there with all the people on all their bedding. There was no problems, there was no fighting, no nothing like today's lunacy. Everybody was like one huge family and everybody was very frightened. And, of course, it was then we started to realise that this could get pretty nasty, you know. You want what it was like going to work in the Blitz, in the morning, there is a TV thing done now, a newsreel, where it shows a bus down a huge crater by the monument. Now, I actually went to work past that. And the thing, I don't know whether anybody else has ever told you, but the thing that sticks out more in your mind than anything is often the terrible smell of burning, which you got used to, just burning, and then hundreds and hundreds of people sweeping glass. It's the most fascinating noise you'll ever hear, realising what caused it. And all these empty shops and offices, everybody putting stuff back in the windows, and everybody going to work quite happily, They've spent all night in the shelters or all night fire watching or in the home guard. Nobody was whinging. Then, of course, the office, I was very lucky, the office moved themselves to either Buckinghamshire, and I was the junior office boy. So they said, did I want to go with them? So I said, too true, I did. You know, get away from home, see? And I then went to either Buckinghamshire and joined the Oxham Bucks Light Infantry Home Guard.
Just before we take it a bit further, what were living conditions like down in the tube station at the Caledonian Road for the people sheltering?
Well, I have such a clear view of some things and I don't remember anything about other. But I always remember the orderliness of it. That everybody was so... They weren't necessarily... It wasn't a cowering fear. Oh, God, God, we must all get here. Nobody wanted to be killed, obviously. And, of course, many of them... There were very few men, and as time went on, there was less men. So you were getting a lot of mums with quite young children. And there they were, all on the platforms, and the people used to get off, and there was sometimes only about 6 foot space. But there was never any problems. Nobody was arrogant, nobody was rude. You could leave your stuff down, children could wander about, you know, and go to toilets or try their little machines if there was anything in there. There was no evil on the surface at our level as there is today. Everybody was like one big family. Not the overplayed way, like sort of Norton, the crazy gang, we were all lovely Cockneys together, but we were all incredibly close. Another generation of people that could leave their front doors open all day, old ladies that could sit in the place and nobody would bother you. It sounds corny, but it was... People had a pride in what they did. You wouldn't think of stealing from anybody because the disgrace. It wasn't the prison or you'd never get another job. It was just a disgrace. Like when I worked in the office, all the bosses were respected. And you would no more think of stealing a few stamps or stealing anything, because if they found out and you were called in front of somebody, to think that you had let them down, I know it seems terrible, to think that you'd let them down and you were a thief. It's not being goody-goody. It's just a disgrace of people that you respected and treated you as, if you like, in a very nice way, that you would have descended to that level. That kept us in line. And, of course, your parents. Think of the disgrace of going home to your parents and saying, you know, you'd been a thief. Well, you wouldn't go home.
Did the bombing shatter people's morale to any extent?
No, I think they got inured, they got used to it, because what you can't understand today is that many of the ladies that were bombed, their husbands were either away, because we had a huge merchant navy, we had a huge navy, we built up our army, so many of the ladies were on their own, and they got bombed out. If they weren't killed, as far as I know, there was very little provision for them. They either were put up by friends or put up by relations, and they just got on with it. They came out the shelters in the morning, the whole bloody house was gone. There was no social services and this, that and the other. There was a certain amount they could go to the local school, but basically, as far as I know, you were fixed up with in-laws, friends, your mothers and fathers, or whoever was able, and they'd all take you in. The same with many of the children that were evacuated. I know some had very unhappy lives, but there were thousands of very good people who gave them a wonderful time. But, I don't think, as I interpreted it, I was only a child, I don't think anybody was coward. And I think we had this mistaken idea that we would see them off.
Did you find the bombing frightening yourself?
No, I'm not heroic at all. My father had fought in the Great War, He was in the trenches for 4 years, and then he went to fight the Turks. He was at school when he left school when he was 12, and he worked in a shoe factory. And he was the quietest and most unassuming man. And to get to where he got in the police force without any drinking, without being in any society, and he never talked about it. And he was always so quiet, and so he knew how to deal with men. He knew everything. And on one occasion, we were in the yard, and we heard this bloody bomb whistling down. And we both did a bit of a run for it and hid in a sort of cupboard, you know, where the old hose wheels were. And I came out, and he said, "By God, son, that was near, wasn't it?" And I said, "It certainly was, Dad." No, I don't think we were frightened in that sense. Not as frightened as I would be today. God, today I'd be scared. Am I carrying on too long?
No, not at all.
I don't want to bore you with my...
How did the war and the Blitz affect your father's job, as far as you could see?
Well, in a very short time, he got promoted to chief inspector, which covered his area was the Angel, Old Street, Moorgate, City Road, and another one which I can't recall. So he was in the thick of it. And in those days, there wasn't the crime, but in those days, a division in London was run by one superintendent and two chief inspectors. That was the command. This place here, when it was a borough, had seven bloody chief inspectors and a couple of assistant chief cons. So from the time I was at home, because I was evacuated, you know, with the office, but my father, they just worked on and on and on. They never got time off. He came home when he could. And of course I had a young sister, and I was only three when the war started. And he just worked on, and of course the bombing was intense. And a lot of men who had been special constables before the war and during when the war started, they were made war reserves. And more or less chaps who were unfit for service, but who were medically reasonable, and of course no criminal record, they all became war reserves, because a hell of a lot of police volunteered for military service, and dozens went to America and Canada with air crew, because they had good education, and they were very balanced type of men. So the police force was in London, the Mets, of course, was very, very short of men.
But the type of duties your father had, did they change because of the Blitz?
Oh, yes, because they had so much... relatively speaking, it was very quiet in London in the police before the war and early on. But once the Blitz came, then of course you had to have huge fire. The AFS had to be enormously investigated. There were huge fires to attend to. They were part of the rescue services in a, if you like, a control way, although in many cases they didn't get in themselves. Also, the ambulances with hospitals. Yeah, in the Caledonian Road, one of the first George medals was awarded to one of our young constables for ploughing his way under wreckage and dragging some people out, you know, and it was very dangerous. So most of the police, like every other service and most people, whatever turned up, they would dig in and help out. So his job became immensely responsible, just the same as an ordinary fire station before the war was very little. Suddenly it became, in an area like London, every fire station was on 24 hours. The hospitals were the same. After every raid, of course, everything was... the water mains were gone, the gas mains were gone, the sewers were gone. Nobody had phones in our day, so that wasn't a problem. But all those services really, they worked non-stop. There was no overtime. You just got on with it. They actually had a worse time, many of them, than we did in the army.
What was your mother's attitude towards the war, being an Irish Catholic? Did she consider it to be her war or somebody else's, because Ireland itself was neutral?
I think coming from the north, she was extremely patriotic, although we never had much of a discussion. It was just taken for granted, you know, that my mother's allegiance was to my daddy always first. The same as when I joined up, you know, and they were so so happy about it. No, I'd say she was fully fully in favour. I mean, many, many Northern Ireland people and Southern Ireland people fought happily. Although, basically, the Southern Irish were supposed to have aided the Germans, weren't they?
Now, you were just telling me about joining the army. Can you pick it up from there, please? The Ox and Bucks Light Infantry?
Yes, we joined the Ox and Bucks Light Infantry. That was the Home Guard branch. That we were attached to that, you see. And we were in an old garage with an archway over the... because it must have been like an old farmyard thing, a big archway with buildings over the top of this old garage, and that was our headquarters. And we had a chap there who was waiting to go in the Air Force, who was later killed, called Matthews. And he was sort of everything I would like to have been, but wasn't. He was decent education, he played rugby, he was fit, he was frightened of nobody, he was great. And we were on guard duty one night, and all down the centre of the roads round that way, because Slough was a big industrial, you know, armaments place, they used to have these huge 40-gallon drums, and they used to fill them up with oil and bang holes in the side and light the lot. So it was like being, well, everywhere was covered in thick black smoke, and so were we. And we were on guard there one night, and we'd always been told that the Germans would came down on bicycles. Anyway, Matthews, who was more awake than me, said, "Hey, buddy, Germans are here." So I sort of thought, this is time to go, you know. So we said, hang on. He said, "There's Germans here." So I said, "No, it can't be." He said, "I can hear the bicycle coming." Next minute, a bloody figure looms right up on top of us. And Matthews is there like a hero, which he was. And he says, "Halt, who goes there?" And the next minute, we're all lying on the floor. The bicycle's on top of us. Some of the worst language I've ever heard. It was the local police sergeant doing an inspection, you see. Only for his gas mask, you know, we'd have killed him. After that, you know, we weren't very happy.
When would this have been about?
End of 41, the winter of 41, because it was dark and wintry.
So you joined the Ox and Bucks Light Infantry in which month, do you think?
I would say around the January when we got evacuated. It might have been before in 40, once the Blitz started, it could have been the end of 40. That's when the firm decided to move out to Buckinghamshire. Or it could have been the beginning of 41. Then the next... we actually had pikes there.
Now, pikes?
Yeah. You know, long poles with... what they used to fight with in about the 12th century, with long spears. And we had a church tower there in Iver Village, one of the old square Norman ones, I think, yeah. And some idiot got the idea that we should go there and get up in the church spire to watch out for parachutists. So having had a religious background, we decided it would be a very good idea to put on the cassock and cotters. And if the Germans did come, we could sort of say, you know, we're just monks, like, you know, we're not having a problem with us. And we'd hope to sort of get out of it all.